Hello and welcome to The Undermind, a podcast about AI development for StarCraft Brood War. I'm your host Shonko, I make computers do things. Let's begin. Hello and welcome everyone. Today's guests are Antiga, a returning guest. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
MacRave, another returning guest of ours.
Hello, hello.
And our newest addition is Habbo, with a J. Please say hello to the audience.
Hello there.
And since you are our newest guest, would you mind introducing yourself at length?
Hello, I'm Habbo. I have been developing my bot Ember for a year. It started as a college project, but after I finished it, my degree, well, I continued developing it, and let's see if it does well in the second Iskade tournament.
And your bot is Egbert, right?
Yes.
I forgot to mention that, I think. And SSEIT is in full swing. I think we have a lot to talk about. And Crazio kind of appeared in the tournament. I think it's... If we were bet on Crazio appearing, then we all would have lost, since he actually submitted the bot, just not one on the ladder. Any thoughts about that?
Well, I think the cannon roll strategy could be pretty devastating if the other bots are not prepared. And also, I have seen some plays from it that Said can train DTs and carriers, so it could be maybe top 32, at least.
I think it's really interesting, the having Crazio drop out and do a cannon rush bot. You know, the cannon rush bot is actually fairly decent. The sort of a cannon contain into DT carrier follow-up is fairly weak to most of the top bots, and it seems to have a fair number of bugs where it either doesn't build or maxes out its supply kind of in the mid to late game. So it's not very robust yet. It looks like it could use a fair bit more work in general. The just the aspect of him dropping out is just sort of unfortunate. You know, you don't get to see the main bot, but apparently he didn't think it was competitive. And we have a new Protoss bot on the ladder.
Oh, who is that? I missed that.
Crazio.
Oh, okay. I thought you were speaking of another new Protoss bot. Days of Zerg hegemony haven't come yet, but it will, trust me. MacRave, any additions to the previous statements?
Yeah, I got an interesting opinion, I guess, on this. I don't know if you guys remember, there's this bot called Fivepool that was on the ladder for a while. Anyone? Antiga, do you remember Fivepool?
Oh, I remember. It did the Fivepool and then it did nothing, and then it transitioned. So it just did six lanes and then did something completely different afterward.
Right. So this is the exact same scenario that we're going to see. We're going to see a bot that he cannon rushes, the other opponent overextends on his defensiveness or some sort of reaction to it, and then transitions really poorly into the mid game, whereas Crazio's Protoss could go and take like three Nexuses or something crazy and just like completely like eco cheese him or something. This is something that we haven't seen, and I'm excited to see it. I'm disappointed his Terran's not there, but I understand it. He is the only person that was actively updating and obtaining, like, you know, staying on top of Sida and Banana Brain and Locutus, whatever. And then those bots, they update last minute to snipe them. So they have all the currently updated information of Crazio, whereas he has nothing. So I don't blame him.
Yeah, it's lonely at the top.
Absolutely.
And I saw, I couldn't help myself but laugh, but I saw a post, someone calling out Crazio as a coward, or what did the guy call him? And I just imagined some guy in a fedora calling him out that he lost his face and have no honor, and it what the fuck?
Yeah, that was really depressing to see. Whoever that is, if you have a bot, let's see it. Because honestly, you can't blame someone for not wanting to get shown up by 5 top bots updating last minute. It sucks. Because I was that person last year. I was second place and everyone updated and sniped me. Iron bunker rushed me. That was the first bunker rush that we've seen against Protoss in, I don't know, ever maybe? Because I know Letabot, he did that, but I think he only did it against Terran.
I see your wounds haven't healed yet.
Wait, what?
Your wounds of the defeat haven't healed yet.
No, they definitely haven't.
Never forget 2017.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the part that gets to be a little hard is when, you know, people spent weeks and months preparing against Crazio for the tournament, and now that he's not playing, a lot of that effort, like, what happened to it, you know? Which makes people feel... they're not really sure what to think about that. You know, if you spend 100 hours preparing to beat Crazio's Terran and then he doesn't show, you know, that kind of leads to conflicted feelings about it. I don't know. What do you guys think about that part of it?
I think it's okay.
Well, one answer to the snipping could be, well, not making a bot good enough until the deadline.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole, you know, philosophy that goes a bit of, you know, maybe people don't update till deadlines, kind of hide stuff that last month. But we talked about this before. There's a balance to be had with it. If you don't update on ladder, your bot is not tested, and you don't really know how it handles on the ladder because the performance differences and things like that. At the same time, if you update and don't save a little bit for the tournaments, it's pretty easy to get pre-trained or specifically countered.
I think we should just dock Crazio's pay until he updates a bot, because he receives so much money for developing his bot.
Yeah, we're all broke.
He gets money for it? What?
No.
Oh, I was like, what? Where have I been?
Where do I sign up, right?
Yeah.
No, that's the joke, that he manages to be in the top of the ladder despite not doing this professionally. Right. And a lot of listeners have asked why I didn't invite Crazio yet. The answer is I did. He just does not like public appearances. So there's that.
Well, Crazio, this is me calling you out. The next time I go on this podcast, you better be. And so Dan should be here too. That would be an interesting podcast.
Okay, so a lot of bots got updated. I just checked the dates. Most of them got uploaded and updated in the last minute, which is very, very much understandable. But there are very old bots still in the ladder and in the tournament, and they are performing quite well. IceLab is a good example.
I think IceLab is probably one of the most interesting, I guess, weak bots, if you want to classify him as weak now. Like, I guess he is weak now. He's got a couple things that not many bots do, which the biggest one is he drops tanks on ledges. And, like, that's just game-ending. Even for a bot like mine, I just don't react to it properly.
I love how humble you are about your bot. And yes, it still uses some tactics that I haven't seen or rarely seen in other bots. I mean, Nepeta even calls it out that most bots don't utilize high ground, and it's just free damage in most of the cases.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, from one of the open source tournaments that he was part of, I remember looking through his code base, and he might have the most commented out code base of any bot, where he has so many ideas that have been tried and commented out as, you know, maybe this didn't work or that worked, but he's got an epic amount of stuff.
Wait, sorry, which bot is that?
Lita.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't know that.
So he's got, like, this has been almost a year ago, so I'm not sure if I want to go down that road of saying for sure, but from what I remember reading through it, there's huge amounts of it that are commented out and some really fascinating ideas inside of it that he implemented and then pulled out and then didn't end up using and things like that. But even the portions that he didn't end up using, some of the ideas are really pretty revolutionary that were uncompleted. So just recommending that it's perhaps worth a read.
Definitely. And you reading source codes and contributing to bots, you mentioned that you had some role in the developing of CherryPy. Would you mind talking about that, or can you talk about that?
I have nothing to do with the Facebook group for CherryPy, other than that I love open source bots, and working on the best open source bot really available, even though it can't play an SSC AIT, is really very exciting. So I have been playing with it in depth, trying to perhaps figure out a way to get it to run on SSC AIT, which at this point I have mostly abandoned because of its client-server model, and regardless of whether you compile it with GPU use or without, it doesn't really play nice for performance reasons under just purely CPU limitations without a GPU. So I don't think we'll see it on the SSC AIT or Bazel ladders, unfortunately. I put in quite a bit of time to try, and it doesn't seem to be easily possible at this point in time. Though I do have hopes for Dave Churchill's new A ladder in the spring and perhaps GPU support. And I know that Michael Cerqui with SSC AIT has been talking about buying some GPUs and stuff. But that, of course, does not mean GPU support at the current time, and at least not for some time, likely.
Yeah, let me take the time to announce that now makingcomputerdothings.com is an official supporter of SSC AIT. I felt I needed to do that, and I would encourage everyone to do the same. Well, everyone interested in StarCraft AI development.
Cool.
Alright, so CherryPy is written in which language?
C++.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that. Why didn't I know that? And Habbo's excellent bot is also written in Java, as far as I know.
Yeah, it's full Java.
And uses BWAPR4J.
Right. If it used BW mirror, but I make the move because the new API is way better.
It's also faster too.
Yes, I have a same experience to both of those. It has just bio type play, Terran bio. Is that right? At least that's what I saw so far.
Yes, it started as a full bio bot. The first version only trained marines, so like marine hell, and then I added the medics, then adding more and more things, skills, and such.
Does it use multiple squads and attacks multiple locations at the same time, or it is just one massive bio ball?
Yes, at first it creates new clusters for each enemy unit and an allied unit, and then with the clusters, assigns squads depending on the tasks, and then it gives them a location to attack depending on ground distances. Also, some of the units are implemented as agents, so like the raids, the vessels, because they require a more complex behavior.
And what's the next steps you have planned for it, if it's not a secret?
Well, for now I'm mostly bug fixing and planning to move on to a new bot.
Oh, cool. Okay, so MacRev, you updated your bot. What's new compared to the previous ladder version? Is there any major changes?
This is more of a development version that I put on the ladder for this tournament. It has a lot of build changes in how the learning works. It has 4 builds total, of which there are multiple ways that it can open the game, such as being a proxy or being something built in my own main. And it has limitations for how each of those builds and openers can work throughout the game. So I basically changed how all my build system works, all my learning works, and because of that, it's really weak. It doesn't really have anything great going for it. I also added pylon walls to B-Web, which means against Terran, I can put 2-3 pylons and then just stick a goon in the hole, and I don't have to worry about, you know, vulture run-bys from bots like Iron and Sida. I don't know if Sida actually does that. Maybe they do. But that was what I mostly worked on. I didn't work on anything in terms of gameplay, beating other bots or anything like that. I just wanted to have a better structure, I guess, for my bot. I changed all of my units to one container. So previously I had multiple containers for different types of units, such as workers, buildings, and combat units. Now it's all just one class that they can do anything. So every worker, if it really wanted to, I could change it to a production building if I really wanted to, but it's not how it works, unless you're a Zerg, I guess. That's pretty much all the changes I did. It was a lot, but it was all structural. It wasn't anything to do with gameplay.
Did I understand correctly, 4 builds or 4 openings? Because that was a little ambiguous.
4 builds, and then each of them have an opener that, like a style, basically. So something like a Forge Expand. You can start with a Nexus first, or a Gate first, or a Forge first. And my learning can figure out which ones are best for every. So those are the openers. The builds themselves are things like I have 1 Gate Core, 2 Gate, 12 Nexus, and 21 Nexus. Those are my 4 builds, because those pretty much apply to every single matchup. There might be a couple small ones, like I can't really think any off the top of my head. Antigua, is there any Protoss builds that don't fit in those 4 categories? 1 Gate Core, 2 Gate Core, 21 Nexus, and 12 Nexus?
There's a few, but I'm not sure the audience wants a list.
There's probably not many, but like for the most part, I just shove them in those categories.
The stove.
That's all it is.
Is any bot using the stove? It's the memest of the builds, I think, ever used by pro players.
There's a few that can do it. Purple Wave being one of them. I'm trying to remember it. And there's 2 other Protoss bots that can do it.
Oh, cool. Who would you bet on at this stage of the tournament? I just checked out. It's still very early on the tournament, so we can make bets.
Well, I need to make my brackets for the round 16 and post those as a guest, I guess. I do that every year, and I haven't quite finished it up. But what I am doing right now is I'm doing a bunch of Docker tech testing versus sort of who I think will be in the top 16 to try and have an educated guess on who will win. I do think that it's perhaps unlikely that Sada wins this year. It's the first time it's participated in this specific tournament. And I think that the Protoss bots of Banana Brain, Purple Wave, and Locutus, all of them have, at least as far as I can tell in testing, better than 50% win rates against Sada. Is pretty interesting. They've all done really well on the preparation side, and they have at least some ways to win. And those top set of 3 Protoss bots all do really well versus the rest of the field in general. The Killbot is sort of an outlier that's pretty interesting. I think it will likely do well. And I think Halpan has some potential as well, too.
It's interesting how few Zerg bots are in the top bracket right now. somehow it's all Terran and Protoss, and yeah, Killerbot is in kind of an outlier. Do you think that's just a coincidence, or there is something inherently more difficult to win with Zerg, or code a Zerg bot?
I think we're close to a point where Zerg can start clawing its way back in. I think most of the problem that we're seeing is that these Protoss, they get such high Dragoon numbers that unless the Zerg macros properly, they just end up dying. And if they keep like bleeding units constantly into cannons and, you know, Dragoon pickoffs, like, we're just going to keep seeing the same Zergs fall over and over and over, because they make such a high army count, bleed off the units, and then have no drones, and they're on two hatcheries. Steamhammer is big for that. He will like suicide six lings into two cannons and then stand outside his opponent's forge expand, making a bunch of hydras off two hatch, and then, you know, bleed a hydra at a time. We need the Zergs to start figuring out ways of containing, and once they realize they have a contain, start macroing. They need some sort of parameter situation to understand how much map control they had, something that Alien had for a while. He had this like a map control parameter or something. I don't know how he used it or how he tuned it, but something like that would definitely help Zerg right now. They need something to control their army to drone count and to bleed less.
It's interesting that we don't see that very, very macro style Zergs much. At least that's my impression. There is no Zerg bot, or very few Zerg bots in place when we see, okay, I'm in a good position, I'm gonna make 10 million hatcheries and just flood everything with it. And I think that's an answer too, but yeah, a lot of Zerg units are just wasted on cannons for nothing.
Yeah, and there's like Killerbot's sort of threat-aware mutas. They're pretty good. They're better at... He's got really good potential with picking off single units at a time. But we need Zerg... Like, I have the ability with my Corsairs to fly around static defenses, dive for overlords. It's not difficult to code. People need to start coding stuff like that for Mutalis. We need to see Mutalis fly into the base, pick off a bunch of workers, fly away, go to the natural, pick off a bunch of workers, go back to the main. Instead, we see Killerbot's mutas start to do that, get cornered, and then lose 12 Mutalis for nothing.
Mutalis micro is a thing that many, many bots can do well, but usually what happens is there is only one control group with 50 Mutalis, and they overkill everything. And eventually the enemy army just grows too strong and one-shots them.
I was talking with Killbot's author about this, and he actually tested multiple groups. Captoron single target kill, and he had better luck with them being in a single ball. I do think that the discussion about Zerg pressure comes down to, like McGray was talking about, a very sort of specific problem, and it's the balance between Zerg worker and army production in some ways. Because the Protoss bots using 4-gate and 5-gate fast expansion builds, which are basically Nascoon builds of two different varieties, they lean on the Zerg so hard that you have to have this really nice mixture of how you build combat units and workers. And how you do that intelligently is one of the great mysteries of being a Zerg bot author. And it is for human players too, to be fair. It's a very difficult problem of when do you build workers and when do you build combat units, and in what ratio that happens is really quite key and not an easy problem.
And also, Zerg drones are the dumbest fucking units in the game. That's my personal bias against them. Anyone who reads my blog knows that. It's not like Zerg don't have a counter to these things you mentioned, the massive Protoss ball. The only thing I saw which was effective, and I think it was by TSC Zerg, was using Dark Swarm. I'm not aware of any other Zerg bots using Dark Swarm.
Steamhammer got it just recently, within the last month. And it's fairly effective, but you know, it's sort of a late game thing. It's not something that gets you out of trouble early.
Yeah, no. Zerg still needs to master that whole early to mid game transition. The mid to late, that's fine. You know, you're a bot. You're gonna have 20 hatcheries spewing units. Like, you have no problem. It's gotta get there. You gotta survive. You gotta get the economy, and you gotta not bleed it.
And it's actually sort of inherent to the matchup as well. You know, high-level human players understand really clearly that if you let Zerg do what they want, they can produce so much and macro so quickly and expand to such a size that it's not really controllable. And the game is balanced around Protoss players leaning on the Zerg fairly heavily at different points of the game to contain their progress and contain their size. So, that early mid stage is pretty rough.
Looking forward to when we do get Zerg to that potential. I'm pretty sure Cherry Pie is probably at that potential, but they require heavy amounts of training in order to get there, I guess that's fine, but I didn't get to watch a lot of replays, but obviously they did well AI IDE. I'm just not sure why they did well. I think it was because of strong Ling micro and economy, and maybe Mutas. I'm not sure. Antigua, did you watch any replays?
Yeah, and you know, I did a whole video series on YouTube playing it personally. So I've played probably 50 games against it as a human and watched a couple hundred replays. So I kind of have a little bit of a gauge on it, but I think it probably has the moment when it decides to fight, and it has probably the best feel on that any bot I've ever seen play. One of the great problems in human play is if you have army, one player has army A and one player has army B, and you see the two armies for a quarter of a second, do you decide to fight or not? And that's something in human land that is only granted by vast amounts of experience. And Cherry Pie seems to decide that very precisely and very decisively at a level that hasn't been seen before in bots. A lot of bots are very indecisive. Cherry Pie is not. And be very, very careful if you're a Protoss and you try and fast expand with cannons versus it, because if there's 1 second that it thinks it has enough army to crack the cannons, it'll do it, and it'll do it well. So it'll keep you on your toes, and there's some really lovely advancements there.
Wait, hold up. Does Cherry Pie understand that it can't surround the cannons if it's wall proper?
I think it has, Cherry Pie, as far as I understand, has full unit pathing for all units all the time. So it can understand how to get the wings inside in the right angle and surround and stuff. Yeah, it's quite good.
That's pretty cool.
Oh yes, one of the hardest problems is pathfinding, as we have discussed before. Hubble, you've been silent for a while. What's your take on pathfinding and those issues?
Well, I guess pathfinding will be the next top skill to add for top bots, because it adds a new paradigm of skills and strengths. Well, for example, in the Cherry Pie case, for surrounding cannons, and maybe a 5 pull could be way more deadlier with the pathfinding.
And I just want to caveat what I said about Cherry Pie, that it's not really all pathfinding all the time. It's like 3 to 4 different types of pathfinding that are overlaid over each other. But if you look at it, and it only works in searching situations, but if you look at it from above as a layperson, it looks like real pathfinding all the time. And it feels that way when you play against it. I will say that on the pathfinding for early combat units, I think there's a whole heck of a lot to be gained there. I've done a couple of streams. People have said that, you know, you can't 4-pull these top bots and win. And because people have been 4, there's 25 bots on ladder that 4-pull, right, against a bot like Crazio. But I've done several streams where, you know, I have 100% win rate versus Crazio 4-pulling. Win game after game after game. And a lot of that is in the ability to get the units in the right location, move them around properly, have them work together to accomplish goals inside the enemy base. And I think that, you know, there's been a lot of focus on these big picture ideas, but getting lean control and like zealot control to another level will really push the bots forward. You know, if you could feed a bot my human level of lean control on the ladder, it'd have like a 90-95% win rate only doing four pull. But we're not there yet, and I don't know when we'll have the tools to do that either.
I think we're getting close to having a good, like, I am glad that I added this, but I don't know how many people are actually using my pathfinding. I added that jump point search pathfinding, which is basically like cheating, as Dan so described it. It is a very, very fast pathfinding algorithm, probably one of the fastest out there, very accurate, and it's, I have it set as a tile resolution for B-Web. People should be using this. Like, if they want ways of being able to get their units to move smoothly through everything, they should be using it. Or, like, use some sort of pathfinding. Don't use Brood Wars. It's crap. You're going to get your units stuck all the time.
Yeah, an interesting experience. I have defeated Hannes with my 4-pool bot by accident, I think, because my links happened to be prioritizing the targets well. But it might as well gone the other way, and my logic is literally just a move onto the enemy base the first time you see an enemy building. That's not because I'm lazy, I just uploaded my bot, because why not? So yes, I can definitely agree that the 4-pool is a very effective thing, and bots should work against it, work hard to be able to counter it.
By the way, your bot, I think, beat McRae once, but it has no idea what a 4-pool is, right? It doesn't understand anything right now, so it just kind of blindly sends a zealot into its death.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of funny.
So, yeah, if just making 4 zerglings as early as possible and attack moving into the enemy can achieve this much success, then, yeah, there is room for improvement.
I think one of the areas that's often forgotten is how what one build does as part of your opener affects your others. I know Fox, Christian McRae, and I, and me and several other people have really long chats about how one opener affects others. One of the interesting things about 4-pool is even if you only do it a small percentage of the time, or you have it as part of your learning, it forces your opponents to open very conservatively against you. And because of that, if you then open a macro build, say the next game, and they've opened very conservatively, you can take some advantage there. And in my view, you know, every bot should be able to rush. Because if you're not rushing, you're throwing away that edge that's gained by forcing your opponents to open conservatively, that you can then exploit by using other builds in combination. You know, that's my opinion. There's other people who think that you can do the one build plan. I disagree.
I completely disagree with them as well. Like, I in testing, I was screwing around and I made a triple 12 Nexus build that I played against an Antigo once, and it beat him, but it kind of surprised him. That worked against Sida because he has one build. It is not, I don't know why people are obsessed with how crazy this bot is. Make 3 bases and then you win. Like, that's how you beat him. You could probably proxy in gate. You could probably horror gate him. I don't know. I don't know if that's possible in Antigo, do you know?
It is possible to horror gate Sida. I've got a whole list of things that work versus Sida. Yeah. So I haven't retried them versus the current update, but versus the previous one, I've got at least 5 per race that work.
We literally, I don't want to spoil, and I'm not spoiling anything here, but I just watched KSL, and straight up, there was a game where one person opened proxy gates, and the other person opened 14cc, and they died. That's it. The game's over. Like, that, you have to have multiple builds, and Sida's gonna suffer. But, I mean, don't tell them that. So, on your point, Antigua, bots that don't have 4-pools, that's fine. I'm going to open Nexus first versus you every single time, and you're going to lose because you're going to have no pressure. And if you open, you know, hatch first, I'm going to open gate first. And my learning will, it'll find that. Like, I found that gate first worked really well versus three hatch before pool. That first zealot arrives and there's only drones. That zealot just goes nom nom nom, eats like six drones. The game's over. There's no recovering from situations like that.
The nom 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 zealot.
I mean, if you open four pool and your opponent opens gate first or nexus first, you win. It's pretty much how it is. If it's a gateway at the expansion, anyways. I don't think there's really a way of surviving a four pool when your gateway is like really far out, like in your expansion. You don't have I don't think you can really survive that, or at least you lose your gateway.
And
you'll see, sort of in some of the bots that I've helped consult on over the years, sort of this philosophy in action. But it's important that you can rush, but it's also important that you can, what I would call a macro cheese opener, which would be to open something like Nexus first or CC first or three hatch before pool. It's important to have what we call width. So you can four pool, you can open three hatch before pool, and then you can do three or four things in the middle, right? And what that gives you the ability to do is to have a wide range of counters to different types of openings that your learning can then exploit intelligently to win you games. And it's a really good combination, and it's part of the reason why a lot of professional StarCraft players often have a sort of set of four or five builds that they rotate through and use intelligently to cover each other's weaknesses. And that's sort of the second stage of that, is picking builds that are counters to the counters to your other builds, right? So you're countering the counters to your other openings and covering your own weaknesses by your opening selection. Having that sort of wise choice of mix provides some nice qualities and resiliency to your bot.
I agree completely. Having a good variety of builds is a pretty strong skill.
And the bots that have, you know, even if you have four or five builds that are widely set apart, and you do a lot of pre-training with a tool like Docker, you can do very, very well. Even if the individual builds themselves are sort of moderately strong. You can see several examples of this on Ladder that build bots that just have four or five builds, and they just have to be sort of decent, and then they do a lot of pre-training, do exceptionally well in comparison to the amount of time invested.
And your previous point that you need to rush, you need to be able to rush. I think rushing does not mean you have to do an all-in rush. It kind of more means you have to do a strong early pressure. And I saw bots failing rush and recovering and eventually winning. I know that's anecdotal evidence, and I don't know the bots that did this, but trust me, it happened.
Yeah, it does. And oftentimes, if you think of your openings on a scale of like 1 to 10, with 1 being the most aggressive, most bots, it's good to include a rush that's super aggressive and all in. Then most bots also include in their opening set of 4 or 5. One of them is sort of a pressure that's not really rush, but if you don't respond to it, it might be lethal, right? Sort of build that's more towards like the 2 or 3 end. And then, you know, of course, you have your 3 hatch stuff out on number 10.
I should start saving replays because I remember this replay, but I can't remember the bot's name now. Anyway, you wouldn't know that bot. It goes to that different school.
Also, I want to hint, or not hint, I guess, touch on one more topic regarding builds. One thing that we saw recently with Locutus, he did like a double probe build. I don't think I was the first to do it, but I had something, it rarely worked, where I put a Zealot and a Probe on my ramp when I was opening DTs versus Terran. Stuff like that, Zerg could be doing this. Zerg, you put two Zerglings on the ramp and then you go one hatch Lurker or something stupid. Or like a two hatch Muta where you're you know, your mutas, your second hatch is in base. You do silly stuff like this, and people won't expect it. We need to see that as well. We need to see boss start to figure out, okay, they block me on the ramp. Maybe they're doing something cheesy. I think I need to do a compromise build.
It's actually led to development of some machine learning type systems, because a lot of the bots, still today, but they're starting to move away from these programming reaction-based stuff. But a lot of bots only react based on scouting information. So probe or link or worker blocks of ramps are really effective. And because of that reliance, we've started to see sort of a second generation of bots that use machine learning to evaluate without seeing for sure, like for instance, the Templar archives to detect the DT rush, to infer that a DT rush might be happening based on a percentage of likelihood, and then deciding what to do from that. And I have some suspicion that that's part of what's in the new CIDA machine learning folders, is the ability to detect things more intelligently using machine learning. We don't know for sure because source is not available based on SSC AIT, but that's my suspicion.
Yeah, it's the whole game is about extrapolating from incomplete information. Coincidentally, machine learning is something that kind of deals with that problem. Another thing I want to circle back on, movement and pathfinding. I was watching Cherry Pie's unit movements, and it's the first one that felt a little more refined. I mean, most of the time I can recognize just the conga line and the built-in BW movement patterns, but with Cherry Pie's, the units seem to be aware of each other. And that's a good thing. I really like seeing that.
So this was something I added as well to my development version, some sort of soft collision, basically. It allowed actually a really interesting sort of, I guess version of my bot, where when I would engage on siege tanks, my units would be so spread that the splash didn't actually do. It works mostly, but it also screws up my combat sim because all my units are more spread out, and they're much further away, so it's kind of good, kind of bad. I got to work with it a little bit more to improve how that soft collision works, but Cherry Pie does it really well. All of their units don't bump into each other. It's like watching fluid go through a funnel. It's pretty amazing.
Do you have your own combat simulator?
Yeah, so that would be MCRS, but it's a weird combat simulator. As Dan has described it, it's called a short horizon simulator, where it's a certain amount of time and it measures how strong units are and how long they'll be in a fight for. So if you have a siege tank and it's going to be in the fight longer than a dragoon will be, then obviously the siege tank is a little bit stronger for that simulation. It's a kind of a weird simulator. I worked on it quite a lot. I guess it's kind of in the air whether it's good or bad or better than something like FAP. I have no idea right now.
It does speak highly of it that Dan went through the effort for this SSC AIT tournament to re-implement it in Scala for his bot with Purple Wave. So there...
he didn't enable
it. Interesting solution. Oh, he didn't enable it?
No, he turned it off.
Okay. But he went through the effort to at least play around with it, so that's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. It was cool. I would like to see people use it, but right now I'm not really happy with the way it's structured. I want to restructure it the same way I did with B-Web, just because... I don't know. I like the restructuring I did with B-Web, and I want to apply that to MCRS, and then apply some of the fixes that I have with things such as siege tanks having a minimum range. So siege tanks can only, if they're in siege mode, they can only be active for the period of time from when a unit's in range to when it's within its minimum range. that actually allowed me to take fights a little bit better versus siege tanks, because if my units realized they were within the minimum range already, they stayed on the tank more, because the simulator would say, well, this siege tank's not actually useful in the simulation at all. So faster your units are, the quicker they can close on the siege tanks, the less stronger they are in the simulator. It's a weird idea, but it kind of worked.
Sounds really interesting. I will definitely check it out.
It's also hard for me to explain it because I don't have a coding background for the most part, so I just look at it and go, I don't know, I put in some numbers and then it spits out a number, and it gives you a percent chance of winning, and I engage if I'm above 75%, and I back off if I'm below 25%, and that's it.
That begs the question, what is your background, if you want to talk about it?
I graduated with a Bachelor of Mechanical Engineering, and right now I'm working as a controls. So, completely different from computer science. Like, literally, the furthest you can go without going into a different field. Like, I feel like mechanical and controls is the furthest from programming that you can get. In maybe water resource would be further, I don't know.
Does Egbert has any kind of combat simulator?
Yes, it has actually two different combat simulators. First, it has Java AP, which I ported from the C++ version of NubiEdge, and then I also added the new combat simulator from Batkeeper called Ace.
Oh yeah, the great names for combat simulators.
Yeah, very great names.
Oh, I remember that. Wait, what simulator is that? Is that the one you made?
What? The new?
ASS.
Yeah, Bite Keepers.
Oh!
I think.
Is there a link to that? I actually haven't seen it.
It's actually pretty cool because it supports SCV repair, medic healing proper, medic healing with energy cost and such. Also, pathing. Also, he added recently Larker spines.
Wow.
How is it called? AOE attacks, tanks and such.
Wow, I didn't even know that another one existed. Now we have a lot of combat simulators, and we're getting to a point where people need to start testing them and improving them. Though combat simulators don't matter as much as the decisions that you have. Combat simulators can only tell you so much.
Regarding the movement, I just remember the discussion on the stream, which I found very funny. Someone said that the games and the units' movement seems very artificial, and that's honestly surprising in the StarCraft student artificial intelligence tournament. I mean, who would have thought? So, again, I'd like to circle back to another point we have briefly touched upon. The Cherry Pie uses GPU for its learning and kind of needs it to be effective. Currently the SSE AIT ladder does not support that. Now, do you think it should? Because it's a serious consideration. So far only Cherry Pie uses GPU for its learning or its working, I don't know exactly what. So one could argue that it gives Cherry Pie an unfair advantage if it's enabled on the ladder.
Perhaps. Just a note that Michael was on chat today and was talking about perhaps getting GPUs for SSC AIT, and seems to be in that direction. Or donated GPUs if you have a company that produces them. We would love to have support in that area as far as hardware goes.
I guess this is kind of a call out to Facebook and Samsung. You guys are investing money into research teams. You have a platform that gives you a free tournament. Especially, let's say Samsung. Samsung, you have a tournament where you're number one right now, but your main competitor isn't on there because there's no GPU. Would you want to compete with them on that ladder? If so, you should be donating some hardware to SCIT. That's my two cents. You want to be the best in the world? Prove it. Give like a free, you know, 1080 times two to SCIT.
Sounded like a little like rappers calling each other out. Yo, Samsung, be real and contribute, man.
Yo, what's up, Samsung?
Yeah, exactly. You should have done it that style. Too late now.
But I mean, it is a serious request. If you know, we have these big companies starting to put their hands in the pot, so to speak. Is it really a lot of money for a big company to donate like two GPUs and a CPU to get like a decent computer running? Like, this is a, you know, SCIT is pretty big and the stream's pretty big. Why not? We could even have it run like 4 games at a time on the stream so that each corner has a game going. Come on, that'd be amazing, wouldn't it be? What, 4 games at once?
We can dream.
My dream.
I'm sure the vast number of listeners at Samsung are very scared now.
Yeah, I would love if we got to see that support. It'd be really nice.
I would say that we're very thankful for the support that has been received, as far as there's been some really nice donations, especially to Aid, but a lot of the support has been focused around Aid and not really spread throughout the other tournaments, which are much less supported. And it would really, some financial or hardware backing would be greatly appreciated throughout the community.
Yep, I agree with that. Thank you for the donations to AIDE, but we should also spread it out.
Yeah, in all seriousness though, I'm on the same side as you. These companies' work are not to be underestimated, and any kind of donation is very much welcome. With that, I think what we might see in the future are these companies or other big companies hosting their own tournaments. Samsung already kind of has an internal tournament, to my knowledge, but maybe something like SSCIT.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see a tournament run from them as well. I think they did that for StarCraft 2. There was some tournament that Leto was talking about, I think it was, or Tier, that they had this tournament called GIST or something. And it was run by a university in South Korea. Kind of cool.
This podcast is not about SC2, but regardless, I would like to hear about the state of artificial intelligence in SC2, because that's an interesting problem, even if the game is not interesting for everyone. I mean, I don't like SC2.
Of course, you know, we're on the Brood War side, so we're a little bit biased, but I would be really interested to hear about it, especially from Tyr, who has done a lot of competing on that side, and competed in both. I think he would probably be the most knowledgeable person.
Let's see if I can get him on the podcast.
It'd be nice to get him, Leto, on it. Someone just to kind of compare the communities and the development between Brood War and StarCraft.
Yeah, both of those two have competed on both sides, so what they have to say would be very interesting. Competing is an interesting thing with SSC AIT. You know, people put in hundreds and hundreds of hours before tournament, and competing is really hard. You know, it takes a lot of personal time away, especially right before the holiday season. And you spend all these hours prepping and preparing and testing versus bots, and then you submit, and you have like this great relief that takes over. You know, that you've finally got the bot in, and there's nothing more that you can do. but then you want to check how it's doing. And you wondered if you did it all right and wondered if you do everything you could, and you just sort of have to let it go and be on the ladder and play how it plays. McRae, you've done a lot of these too. You know, how do you feel about that?
I like competing on the ladder, but I think it makes you a target as well. I don't know. I guess I'm on the fence about it. I do enjoy that last minute sigh of relief when you submit, but the one problem I've had is I love to add bugs, and then I'll submit something and then I'll realize there's a bug, and then I go, ah, crap, and then there goes, like, you know, 5% win rate, and then a week later I find another bug and there goes another 5% win rate, and then all of a sudden, you know, I've lost 20% win rate to bugs, and I'm just like, ah, well, I guess that happened.
Yeah, that always sucks.
Yeah, it sucks.
My bot has 24% win rate, well, head on the ladder, which is outrageous.
You can make a really good four pool, though. Four pools work.
Yeah, but it's a really bad four pool. That's the point.
That's okay. Stupid.
It's actually amazing how much work it takes to do a four pool right. To scout in the proper directions, build everything at the right time, have the placement go down correctly, have the wing's path correctly to the target location, actually kill everything. There's a surprising amount of effort that goes in there, and a lot of that's been underestimated in years past.
I think what is really underestimated is just wrestling with PWA API. I mean, this is my second bot, and I still finding out like what the fuck is going on here. I have WTF moments every time I sit down and code a little.
Yeah, it's really hard. You know, it's an older game, and some parts of it were made in weird ways that don't really make any sense. And when you start dealing with the game engine as a bot developer, there's a whole host of really strange stuff you find that you would not think of as a human player.
I just imagine two dudes sitting in the Blizzard offices. The year is 1998, and just one saying to the other, I just get in this hack, no one will ever find out, no one will ever use it.
Yeah, so there's some really hacky stuff in the game engine and how it operates behind the scenes, and it can be pretty scary when you start making a bot.
Like, it turns out that Reavers actually use ground distance for their range. Why? That's the only reason. There's no other reason.
And Dark Swarm just moves the shots.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the weirdest hack ever. I mean, it doesn't delete them, remove them, it just offsets them to the side. It's not something you would ever expect unless you deal with the game in depth.
I think the stupidest thing, though, is that buildings have pixel sizes as well as tile size. Why is that a thing?
And scanner sweeps are units.
Yeah, and Psy Storms are bullets? I think neutral bullets? I can't remember. Wait.
Weird stuff. Really weird.
I love Rude War, man.
Comshot scans are actually units.
Yeah, it's like, I don't understand why they had to code it that way, but I mean, it was done in like 98 or whatever it was.
Blizzard knew at the time what it would become. They didn't have any idea it'd be this popular. I've read several interviews, you know, they were sitting in their offices in California and going, what are all these Korean people doing playing the game, and what's going on, and go to these tournaments, and, you know, I mean, they're really confused by all of that and the popularity and how competitive it became. A lot of it was really just a surprise, and the game engine was never designed in some ways to take that. And then in bot world, we come along and we say, all right, we're going to shove 50,000 APM through, you know, this 10-year-old game engine, or 20-year-old game engine now. good luck.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I remember playing StarCraft on a computer that was had the third, I mean tenth, of processing power than my phone right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, the amount of CPU required around these bots is nuts.
Yeah, BWAPI has a lot of quirks. And another thing which should have, which I'm sure was funny, but how popular it got in South Korea. Imagine the two same dudes sitting in the bar and hearing about the Korean tournament scene for the first time. No, no, Gary, you're fucking with me. No, no, man. It can't be true.
Why are they playing this? I don't know, man.
What is this shit?
I mean, we did it for the money. We were young, we needed the money, but... Alright, and let's talk about the most important tournament of all. Or not tournament, the pizza challenge.
Well, so I have released a challenge called the Pizza Challenge, which is essentially, I've long had an informal offer to bot authors that if you think that you can do it, I'll schedule a best of five against your bot, me playing as a human, and stream it for people to see. And the only person that's taken me up on that challenge at this point is Crazio, which I went against 3-0. And then we played the last two games just for fun, and he won game four and I won game five just for entertainment value. And I really like to have more takers. Basically what happens is that you request to me to, you can get a hold of me on Discord or on the website for NIST. There's a column there for the pizza challenge, and, send me $10 via PayPal, which pays for pizza while I practice. Because I'm going to sit down and practice up and play probably 20 hours of ladder games and then probably several hours of preparation matches against your bot to practice on the map pool. And then play an official streamed best of five against your bot. And that's to provide an incentive, if you win, I will buy you pizza, and if I win, I get to keep the $10 and buy myself a pizza. So, but the idea here is to provide a way to gatekeep into playing humans and to get bot authors some experience in doing so, and how that structure works, and to provide that. And you know, if you do really well versus me, you know, maybe I can help schedule a match versus a top 2,000. Google player, and if you do well versus them, you won't need my help scheduling a match versus a top 500. So, yeah.
I wish the very best for all bot authors who take you up on the challenge, but I think you're just scamming out pizzas of people, which I'm totally okay with, just saying.
Yeah, well, it's pretty interesting. I like pizza. And I'm sure the bot authors like pizza, so I got to do something so that people reserve their spot, and I get something out of it out of practice time if they want. I got to justify time spent to family and work and things like that somehow.
All is fair in love and pizza. And and with that, I'd like to conclude this week's podcast. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thanks. Bye.